So good evening. This evening we will be taking a look at Romans, the first chapter, verses 16 to 32. Very, very powerful chapter it is. But it has three big points that I want to make tonight. This is not the Southern Baptist Convention where we have 3 points for every sermon, but I do have 3 points tonight for a sermon. One is that the gospel is a roadmap to salvation, and I'm going to show you which scriptures show that. The other is that God tells us all mankind is without excuse for not believing him because God has revealed himself through what he's made. And also, the last point is disobedience, and you can make a note on that. Disobedience equals disaster. And the deception of the adversary is that it isn't disobedience. We justify what we're doing, but it always leads to disaster. Maybe not immediately, but at some point it does. So the first point was that the gospel is a roadmap to salvation, and that's found in Romans, the first chapter, verses 16 and 17. And it says, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God for salvation." Whoa, the gospel is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, not just those who give it an acknowledgement that it was written, but to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, because those are the ones that were the chosen people of God that he spoke to, but now it's to the Greek, meaning all those who were not called of God. So for those who were God's people and those who weren't, this is the greatest, tremendous news. And it's telling us that the gospel, the good news, the things that were written in the scripture, it's the roadmap to salvation. Not the religious experience of saying a few words and there, now you're blessed. I mean, sitting in church doesn't make you a Christian any more than sitting in a garage makes you a car. You either are one or you aren't. This environment isn't going to do that. Now, hopefully, any church is going to provide an environment that's going to help you along, but it's between you and God. And it's not trying to find out, I got to find myself. Well, when you find yourself, it's just going to be broken. You're going to find what doesn't work. You're going to find the handicap that happens spiritually because of what Adam did. So finding yourself is the last thing you want to do. Jesus happened to say, crucify yourself. Crucify your flesh. He didn't say, find yourself. He said, I already know what you're like. You need to ask me to come inside so that I can make some differences. And that's the huge difference for that. So he goes on and he says, for in it, the righteousness, meaning the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. Not meaning belief to belief. There's a whole lot of people say, you know, oh, I acknowledge there is a God. Well, good for you. You have to have him your king, your Lord, your Savior. You have to actually ask him in. And that faith to faith doesn't mean belief system to belief system. It means binding to binding. Every obedience is like, if you were standing beside Jesus' leg, every worship is like a rope that wraps you around his leg. Every praise is another rope. It's another binding. Faith, that original Greek word meant, came from pistuo, pistis. It meant binding, not believing. Wow. You can believe a whole bunch of stuff. It doesn't make it true. And we've said this a number of times. Years and years ago, they believed with all their heart the world was flat. Hello? Believing something powerfully doesn't make it true. So our quest is to find the truth. And Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. God has all truth. He cannot lie. Well, I just don't believe that. Well, you know something? God gave you free will. Because if he forced this on you, it'd be like spiritual rape. You'd be like a robot. The only way to show God you love him is to obey him. You're not going to give him a car. You're not going to give him money. Or heaven's his home. Earth is his footstool. There's nothing he needs from us. We need him. We were born broken because of what Adam did. We are remended and sown back to God because of what Jesus did. And someone can believe something else with all their heart. It doesn't make it true. So your quest needs to be for the truth. And a lot of people believe with all their heart there is a God. A lot of people believe with all their heart there isn't a God. A lot of people believe with all their heart there's many gods. Well, guess what? They all can't be true. Because if many gods is true, that means the others aren't. If one God is true, that means the others aren't. If there is no God, that means the others aren't. So it's truth. You see, that's why God talks about seeking the truth. He says the truth will set you free. Not free to do what you want because you're born broken. Doing what you want is going to be far from the glory of God. You're going to be free from the bondage of sin and death. You're going to be free from deception. You're going to be able to actually go to the real God and get the real salvation in Jesus Christ. Not some religious, ceremonial, traditional gobbledygook that makes you feel holy. God wants you to be holy. And you can't be holy by yourself. You got to die to self and let Jesus live. The day you're holy is the day you let him come out of you. The day you're holy is the day. And well, so 5 hours from now, you might not be so holy because you're still struggling. We're still learning. We're on this journey. That's why you can't condemn each other. You're going to go for it says, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. As it is written, the righteous man shall live by faith. There is a binding to God, but there is a believing of God. I mean, you have to know the truth. You have to submit. You have to give unto him. It's so, so powerful. Now, it's not by religion, it's not by ceremonies now, and not by works. That's a very confusing understanding about the works out there. It's that faith, that binding. Now, if you're bound to Christ, guess what's going to come to you and through you in abundance? Works. But just works by themselves don't mean that you belong to the Lord. I mean, there's a lot of atheists out there and Buddhists and precious, wonderful people who just have not stumbled onto the truth yet. If they ever care to, that's going to be between them and God. But a lot of them are out there not living unto the truth. They are not saved in the Lord Jesus Christ at this point, and yet they're doing good works. They're feeding the poor. They're building the orphanages. An atheist, for crying out loud, can build an orphanage. It's a good work. But God's not talking about it. So it's not works. You don't show up in front of God and say, okay, now you got 100 good works and 15 bad works. There you go. You get into the heaven. Nothing unclean can be in the presence of God. It's the cleanliness, not your good works. Like I said, though, good works should be accompanying those that are full of the Spirit of God because he's full of good works. He's full of what? The love and the kindness and the patience and all of the wonderful fruit of the Spirit. The good works of God. Yes. Yes, yes. So when we talk about this gospel being the roadmap to salvation, I wrote down the wrong word over here. I gotta get that straightened out of my head here. But anyways, it's that roadmap to salvation. And we've talked about this before. In giving us the roadmap, he says, this is who I am. This is what's going on in Jesus Christ. The law is finished now. In the Old Testament, it was full of a whole bunch of stuff. All the turtle doves and the hams and the rams and the hog dogs and frogs and the blood and the rules and on this day and the third day and the seventh day of the month. All of that was law because Jesus hadn't come yet. Obeying the law showed that you loved God and you had righteousness based on that, but you still didn't get to heaven when you died. You went to a waiting place. And when Jesus died, says he descended into hell and preached captivity captive. So Noah and Adam and Moses didn't go to heaven when they died. They went to a waiting place, which was a good waiting place because they were righteous unto God because they had obeyed whatever was going on in their era of time. But now Jesus has come. This is the new and living way. They weren't restored to God. They just had the wrath of God held back from them by obeying the law. We actually have the inhabitation of the Spirit of God inside of us. That's why the temple of God's pretty important. That's why we talk about what we should do with our body and the holiness that needs to be there. I mean, God is talking about representation, the representation of the holy, right here, in a broken soul. And I was broken. I didn't come to know the Lord till I was 30. I'm not going to go into the details. Former students here, you know, hey, we're not going to go into all those details. It wasn't right, but God changed me. His Spirit in me makes it holy. His Spirit in me, my thoughts, my words, my deeds, they all changed. And it wasn't me sitting around going, I can't do this now, I can't do that. It was gone. I can't explain it. The desire to do that which I did so wholeheartedly was gone. It had nothing to do with rules. There was such a love in my heart for the Lord. Whatever you say, help me to do it. If I struggle, help me to do it. I want to do what you say. So I tell you, when I started reading the gospel, which I never did till I was 30, and came to know the Lord, I'd never read the Bible. I didn't know what was in it. I grew up in church. Someone else told me what was in it. Wasn't that brilliant? I need to know what's in it personally. And it's good to be open for all the teaching. I'm teaching you tonight. It's good to hear from what God might say and what he's sharing with us. But boy, I tell you, He has to show us the way, because when judgment comes, God would be unjust if he didn't tell us what was going on. Can you imagine? You never told your kids that they were supposed to pick up their clothes or whatever, and then when they're 18, they go, okay, now you're going to go to jail because you didn't pick up your, you know what I'm saying? You're going to be punished severely because you didn't do this. That would be so wrong. And God is how much more above that? Wow. He has to show us what is right, because when his judgment comes, it's going to come on all of those who disobeyed him, all of those who denied him, all of those who refused him. And you don't know how many, just, well, they never got to church. Doesn't make any difference. God can reach you in your heart. You could be on a desert island, and he can touch you in your heart. Everyone on that desert island could go down every Tuesday and worship some black rock down there. And if you have an open heart to God, some point in your life, you're going to go, you know, I don't know what's out there, but I know it isn't that rock. That is not God. There is no power there. I'm searching for whoever you are. Whatever is out there, I need you. You put a call out like that, I don't care if you're on a desert island. God will, if there's no scriptures around, if there's no teacher around, he'll teach you at night in your dreams, in your heart. And when that heart is open and willing, God will get a hold of you. So don't say, I don't have a chance to read the Bible, whatever. God is already speaking to you. And this whole world just about knows the message. There is but one God, and he has sent himself as Jesus Christ to die for our sins, to restore us. He did. Jesus took my capital punishment because, well, you didn't do any bad crimes. You didn't rob any people or kill anyone. No. But my impurities and my decisions and my coarseness and my unkindness and my unforgiveness and my anger and my impatience, you go through the list, was unclean. I had that dirt on me. I couldn't go to heaven. I know I've been saved. Not religion saved. I was saved from hell. I was reunited with God. And I wasn't even out seeking it. But see, he saw my heart. He knew I had kind of like some of the information in there. But information in your head isn't transformation in your heart. That only comes between you and God. Now, it's good to go to church and hear some of the good news. But you got to be doing this on your own, too. You need some time with God in those scriptures saying, God, show me. Teach me. Bathe me with your wisdom. Bathe me with your understanding. So when that hammer comes down, at the end of the end of the end of people's life, and at the final end and the final judgment, boy, I tell you, you're going to be okay if you're on the handle end of that sword. And God has mercy. He says he doesn't want any to perish. He's not picking sides. He doesn't care if you're strong or weak. He doesn't care if you're rich or poor. What a message. Come to me. Wow. And I will give you rest. Now, when you say rest, some people think that means taking a cruise, sitting on your couch, never getting up, having the remote for a week. I don't know. No, that's not the rest. It's the rest of our troubled souls. You get some of that settled down, you're going to be able to hear from God. You're going to be able to see what he says to do. So powerful. Now, God also says, second point, that mankind is without excuse. There's a lot of people, well, you know, well, God didn't tell me, you didn't tell me, whatever. No, God's going to make sure that every single one, he put a light into every man that's ever come into the world. You either start leaning toward that or you snuff it out. Wow. Romans 1, 18 to 23. People don't like to hear this, and this isn't a wrathful, God's going to strike you dead. No, this isn't a wrathful God I'm talking about. Oh, he has wrath. But this is a loving God that sees our handicap. He sees our weakness. He says, hey, just come to me. I'm not asking you to do what I tell you to do because you're born like not able to do it. It'd be like asking Sarah to get up and wash the dishes. No one would even ask her because they know she can't. God says, I'm not asking you with your broken nature to love someone because it can't. It's only going to love them till they take you off again. I'm not asking you to forgive someone with your nature because if it's too grievous an offense, you're going to look them in the face like, you're going to die and fry in hell. They want the horrible things to happen to them that they may have done to someone else. God's saying, I'm not asking you to use your nature to do what I have written. I'm just saying, give me access to your heart, and you will be able to do and obey that which I have set up. Then it's justice, you see. Because if it was only perfect love, everybody would be there. But it's not the love boat. Heaven is not the love boat. Kumbaya. You have to be clean, and there's no way you can be clean except through Jesus Christ. It's sort of like, I just spent the last couple of days, a good deal of time back and forth in the hospital and visiting some people. You know, I have you wash your hands all the time, yeah? Well, you can go and wash your hands, you can go and take a shower and all this kind of stuff. You can't go into the operating room where it has to be super sterile. You see what I'm saying? Your regular clean isn't going to hack it. You've got to have super special clean. You've got to have sterile clothes. You've got to rub and scrub. There's a certain soap you have to use. There's brushes you have to use. There's a technique you have to use. And you've got to do it for a significant length of time. And that's not even going to be in there. That's going to be underneath a sterile gown. You've got to scrub and scrub. And then you don't even use the hands that are clean. You put on sterile gloves. Can we understand this? Nothing unclean can be in the operating room because that's going to bring infection. Nothing unclean can be in heaven because that's going to bring infection. If you don't have this stuff cleansed by the Lord, if you don't have it washed away from you by Jesus, if you don't have that unique experience with Him and that Spirit of God ruling in you, I can't imagine going to heaven and all of a sudden someone who didn't have the anger thing straightened out with God, who died and actually brought His personal anger to heaven, it's going to start all over again. If someone brought his lust, it's going to start all over again. Someone brings the greed, it's going to start all over again. You have to be dead to that. Dead to the flesh. And it says alive in Christ. So it's not a matter of just showing up with your cleanliness. It doesn't cut the mustard, so to speak, as the old saying is. I'm old. I can say old things, you know. Cut the mustard. Do you understand? I mean, can we let our hearts understand? And God says, listen, this stuff is important for everyone to understand. And I'm telling you, you might stand there and say, I didn't know, but mankind is without excuse. The second point. And in Romans 1, 18 to 23, it says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven, not against everybody, against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. Who what? Who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. They're saying what we do is okay, it's fine, no problemo. They give excuse to every sin. There are people into pornography. There's people into all sorts of child abuse. They think nothing of it. They're lying on their income tax. They're robbing banks. They're beating their wives. They're just doing everything that's ungodly and unrighteous, and they're suppressing the truth. Oh, that's okay, no problem. God knows. Oh, I'm safe. It's okay to do this. If you're still doing that, wholeheartedly, without that struggle, I tell you, it's a high probability you may not have had the right connection. Or you just could be struggling. So I'm not going to make a judgment here. But I'm just saying, you have to look at what's going on. And God says His wrath is going to come upon those who have that unrighteousness and who suppress the truth. Who said, oh, this is okay. Remember, God says in the end times, they're going to call evil good. And good, evil? Well, when I was growing up, there were laws against abortion. There were laws against homosexuality. There were laws for the prayer in school. And now, it's totally reversed. There's laws for homosexuality, laws for abortion, and laws against prayer in school. And I go, whoa, wait a minute, how'd that happen? That's in my lifetime. So people who are saying the evil is now good, they are suppressing the truth. There's many who've never heard the truth, and they are suppressing the truth. They're bringing up a whole generation who think all this stuff is really okay. Now, I'm not saying that abortion and homosexuality are worse sins than anything else. There's a whole life full of negative, unclean, incorrect, low level, ungodly, all sorts of things. God's not looking askance at the homosexual any more than He's looking at the guy who's over in his house lying on his income tax. They're both unclean. You both can't get in the kingdom because you're unclean. That's all God is saying. Come to Him and get clean. And then when you pick up some road dirt, see, because your soul's going to be clean in the Lord, but your little human nature's going to poke its ugly head up now and again. So God will help you deal with that. But boy, I tell you, when you are connected and you become one of the children of the King in that wonderful experience of forgiveness and cleanliness in Jesus Christ. He'll take you all the way. That's why you can't point a finger. Oh, they came to know the Lord, but they're still drinking. They're still struggling. You need to go help them as much as you can, but don't reject them and don't deny them. And some people, myself included, and others have lived with some of the horrors of alcoholism in our families. And it's very tough to get through, but God knows how to straighten out their hearts and lives. It's just that it might have been 40 years of misery and a few months of cleanliness. And our nature says, well, that's really unfair. They lived all those rotten lives and here only a few months of being good. You know, see, God isn't looking at what you did. He's looking at, are you clean? That's what he's looking at. Are you clean? And really, 40 years in God's eternity is like nothing. It's a blink. We think it's long because we're time bound. He's timeless. Always a little tension here, you know. He doesn't think like we think. Like if you live to be 120 years old. Many of you have heard this. I've said this many times. You could be 120 years old, 24 hours in every day, long time. It's nothing to God. Not because he's demeaning us, but in eternity, there is no time. He doesn't think of, I got to hurry up. Everything is a plan. Everything is controlled. There's order. There's wonder. I just, oh, yes, Lord. But I'm not there yet. Help me and help those that we know to get your order, to get your way of thinking, your way of feeling, your way of wanting as the ruling spirit within. And it can't rule in you unless it is in you. And that's up to you and the Lord. But anyways, he makes it clear now. You're without excuse. All this unrighteousness. He says, because that... Now, this is the corker for a lot of atheists out there. And I'm telling you, you can say what you want to say or be anything else. The truth, what is known about God, he says, is evident where? Within them. For God made it evident to them. Every single one is going to face God, whether they believed in him or not. And at some point, they're going to remember some co-worker told them something, some kid in kindergarten told them something about God and Jesus, someone in church, their grandmother, their friend. They're going to have heard it on the radio, seen it in a banner, looked at it on a, you know, a billboard. The family that prays together stays together. You know, Jesus is Lord. I don't care what. They will have at some point, and if they live on that desert island, God will touch them in their heart. They will have heard about him, and they will have had a choice to make. So no one's going to be without excuse. There's a stirring within. Even when kids are little, who teaches them to lie? They're not even old enough. No one's even sits down and tells them to lie. Did you do that? No. That's the broken nature. It is already there. Anyone ever have an infant? You don't go and tend to them at their liking? Screaming and yelling and carrying on. I want what I want when I want it. Who taught an 8-month-old that? Now, you can't just let them cry. I mean, you got to tend to... But when they're changed, when they're fed, when they're loved, when they're held, when they're whatever, and they're still, I want something else. This thing is evident really early that it's broken. So there's something inside. And why do you feel guilty? Did you do that? No. There's something unsettled, sneaking around, doing something. You're told not to do it. The little kids, they don't touch that, and they go like this. They're looking right at you, and the hand is going right out there to that cup or that vase or whatever it is. There's something that stirs within them, but they know something in there. They know it's wrong. Why do they know something isn't right here? Because God put a light into every man that's come in the world. He made it evident to them. For it goes on and says, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and his divine nature have been clearly seen.
Well, I didn't see any of it.
Well, he tells you where it is. Being understood through what has been made. Being understood through what he has created. Every tree, every river, every gorge, every fish. And what has man done with his broken thinker? He said, oh, all that came from a big bang. All that order came from chaos. Excuse me? Not even the laws of physics are going to go along with that. Things go from order to chaos. They don't go from chaos, broom, to order. I heard somebody say it one time. It was like taking like a million or a billion letters, individual letters, and blowing them up and having them come back down to earth as the Webster's Dictionary. I mean, you know, what is the likelihood of that happening with all that order coming from chaos? It's not, even in the mind of man. He is so entrenched in his own godness that he can't believe God. God says, I created the earth. And man goes, no, you didn't. It blew up and became all these things. Duh. And God goes on and says, for even though they knew God, they heard about him. They heard others tell him. They heard him screaming from the mountains. They knew God. They did not honor him as God or give thanks. But what happened? When you don't honor God, when you don't give thanks, when you don't show the gratitude like our country used to do, every single day in this country, 180 days a year, that the kids were in school, they read a verse from the Bible and said a little prayer to God. I know, I went to public school. I went there for a while before I went to another school. And as a young kid, the teacher would read a verse from the Bible. Something as terrible as, it never mentioned Jesus. It never said, you know, it just was a verse from the Bible. Something like, return a kind word for an unkind word. Well, how God-awful is that, you know? Wow. They would read the verse, and then we would say a little prayer. And that prayer was, God, didn't say anything. Didn't he mention Jesus? I mean, not that they purposely did that. It just said, God, please bless our school and our teachers and our nation today. Amen. But it was honoring God. God understands that he is ethereal. God understands that he's big. God understands we don't know. He understands we don't understand. But he'll start out with him, and he'll lead us to all the little details of everything that we need to know. So because they didn't honor him or give him thanks, what happened? They became futile in their speculations. I see that happening now. They're speculating how to help everyone get health care. They're speculating how to help the poor in their food. They're speculating how to do something in Syria. They're speculating how to build a house. They're speculating. They're speculating on how they're going to get this done. But it's futile. Unless they are honoring God, and we don't as a country, as a people we do. There's many, many people. There's a majority of people who still pray every day. They read the scriptures. They love God. They're wonderful Christians. They just don't have the microphone right now, but it's not in the public square like it used to be. So God says they're going to be futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Whoa. Now it starts getting that you can't even hear the truth when you hear it. You can't see it for what it is because you're in the dark. You went away from the light. If I just had a candle in a totally dark room, the only place you'd be able to read this is right here by the light and the candle. The further away you go, you cannot see. It's going to be dim. And they exchanged the glory. This is what happens. All their futile speculations. They exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals, etc. And that is seen. When they walked away from God, they invented their own gods. They very often, they worshipped in Egypt, they often worshipped cats. They worship cows. They worship cows today in India. Children are starving of malnutrition. They won't kill a cow. They consider it sacred. It's their God, one of their gods. And what did he say? Futile in their speculations, professing to be wise, they became fools. Wow. So mankind is truly without excuse. Boy, I tell you, deception, suppressing the truth is deception. That is a devil's game. He's going to lie. Whenever there's a lie, you can smell and sniff out some evil force someplace. Lying is an abomination to God because it does suppress the truth. That's why it's so important to understand this. Even little kids, you go say, hey, listen, you got to tell me the truth. That's more important. You won't even get punished if you tell me the truth. Even if the truth means you did a wrong thing, I got to know, you know. You have to tell them early. Even though they don't understand the spiritual implications, we need to train our lie-leaning nature to tell the truth so that we can start recognizing the truth when we see it. God, this God sense that God put in us, you either respond to it or you don't. And the third point tonight in Romans 1, 24 to 32, this clearly says disobedience definitely equals disaster. I mean, when I read these scriptures, I go, whoa, Lord. Therefore, now, he goes through this whole list, you know, they didn't honor God anymore and they're doing all this gyration and God gave them over. He didn't make them lustful, They were hardened in their hearts towards him, and he goes, have it your way. God will never say that to you if he sees a pinprick of hope, of willingness in your heart. He'll never say, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya. Never. He will chase you till the day you die if you're 100. But if he sees that your heart is stone cold and will never change, he very often will, that, and the scripture says that, he lets you over to the desires of your own foolish heart. It said he gave them over in the lust of their hearts to impurity, that their bodies were even dishonored among them. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and they worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who was blessed forever, as we previously mentioned. And for this reason, they made a cat or a dog or a cow greater than God. For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions. Not that they didn't have them. He gave them over to them. Their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way, also the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire toward one another. Men with men committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. Now, that does not mean, this is such an uproar going on about homosexuality and those that are in different sexual things. I'm not going to get into a whole discussion on that tonight, but just let it suffice to say, there are holy and spiritual reasons, not just physical reasons, that God said one man and one woman. And the physical act of a man and a woman coming together in procreation really is a reenactment of God and his people. The male with the seed of life actually enters into the woman who holds the seed of life in which it can grow. It is the biggest, fattest word picture of what God was saying. It was supposed to be a holy endeavor with people who love God and who prayed. And even their physical coming together was supposed to be a holy thing. Now it's what? It's dog level. We have 13-year-old boys and girls, either with the boys and the girls, or the girls and the girls, and the boys and the boys, and desecrating their bodies. Not all they're doing is getting the pleasure quotient out of it. The spiritual essence, the sexual act was supposed to be an act of worship. Not like in the pagan temples when they had the prostitutes. I'm talking about, and not that you would even be thinking on that, but your love of God and your honoring of God, even in your coming together, would have been a holy moment. A spiritual moment as well as a pleasurable moment. A physical moment. You see, God doesn't separate the natural and the spiritual. Whenever he has you do a good work, it's not only is going to do something like mow someone's lawn or make a pie, it's going to have a spiritual aspect to it. It's going to do something to their heart spiritually. And when you come together as a man and a woman, and when you did what God said, you didn't have sex beforehand, you saved yourself for the person, a man and a woman, who honored God with obedience, even if it was hard, even if they didn't understand it or didn't like it, when they come together, God's going to recognize their bond. Now, many people have not done that. And God says, you know, I know, but I don't care. Just come to me as you are, because I'm going to make it right from this point on. But when you do it absolutely right and those people come together, their bond is together. It's not broken because it's not based on the foolishness and, well, I'm tired of you and whatever and I can't. You know, after about at the 7-year mark, now it's even sooner, about the 7-year mark, men and women that are married, they're splitting. I don't like you anymore. I'm so tired of being tied down. I'm independent. I can't. If you were honoring God, even though you went through that period, God would bring you through it and you get a better bond on the other side. Ask anyone who's doing it that way. You see, God's obedience to his ways is huge because it brings about the success you're looking for. Just stumbling, bumbling around what you think is best isn't going to work. And this is what happened. So God's not coming against homosexuals. He also says, listen, Leviticus, read Leviticus sometime when you get in that chapter. A lot of people who are homosexual really say, God is so mean and he's coming against only homosexuals. He knows that's not wrong. Listen, God gives a list of who not to have sex with. Grandmothers, mothers, nieces, nephews. It goes through the whole list, all those verses. And why did he tell them that? Because they were doing it. He says, you're missing the point. I have a holiness here for you. And you're throwing it away by suppressing the truth. So you go down through all of Leviticus 18. And all these verses, and your mother and grandmother and sons and daughters and son-in-laws. I mean, he goes, I'm amazed when I read it. I go, wow, what a bunch of combinations. And then he gets down to verse 22. He doesn't address homosexuality till verse 22. So it's just as wrong all those other things, not just the one. If someone's heterosexual and they commit adultery, they're just as unclean and wrong. So it's not God picking on. He's just saying, this is the way. Walk in it. It's a holy way, even though your whole society is not telling you that. There's many homosexuals that are going to be in heaven. And not because they were homosexuals, but because they got clean before God and he forgave them. And people are like, you know, some sins, like, oh, the alcoholic, oh, the drug addict, oh, the homosexual. What foolishness. The truth of God is open to everyone. And like I heard recently, my acceptance of you as a person is not my endorsement of your activities. So don't think because I love you that what you're doing is okay. I'm on my journey, you're on your journey. I'm not going to judge you, but we need to meet the measure of God, not what everyone's telling us or what our own bodies are. As is evident, they suffered the penalty of their error. And then he finishes up and he goes, and just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind. Now it got even worse, to do those things which are not proper. Being filled, whoa, don't want to be filled. Don't get, you know, you might have a couple of ounces there. Don't get your cup filled with unrighteousness. Because what happened? Wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. God, they are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And although they know the ordinance of God that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they know they are wrong. They know God says you're going to die in that filth. They not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. Whoa. God's not picking on anyone. He just says one is a clean way and a holy way that will enrich your life. And the other one, even though pleasurable and easier, is going to destroy your life, both physically and spiritually. I think we're seeing a lot of this today. So the God's truths are truly being abandoned or totally perverted from their original intent. As I said, you know, prayer is out of school. The Christian foundations are being torn up and thrown away as like they didn't exist. Go read some of the letters that were written by the early governors and the people that were in the Congress. And they signed them in the name of the most holy Redeemer. Wow. Now, that screams Christian to me. You know what I'm saying? But that's being perverted, and et cetera, et cetera. But lies, that's the biggest tool of the adversary. So the title of this was No, No, Don't Go There, that disobedience equals disaster, and it really does. But I don't want to leave us on this black, glum, oh, no, all this terrible stuff. If you let God's Spirit rule within you, you will go further and further away from the darkness and further into the light of God. Not holy, holy, holy roller, you know, oh, don't swear in front of me. Oh, for crying out loud. Of course you should have a good speech coming out from you. God said, let no unwholesome word come out from your mouth. But if someone isn't there yet, you are not God. When I worked as a chaplain with the Army, I'm telling you, honey, they had some ripe things coming out of their mouths. I'd be standing in a little group of them. They just kind of forgot I was there, hadn't noticed me, and I'm just listening. I'm not going, hey, that's so offended. I'm just praying, you know, God, just show them a better way and whatever. But I'm not sitting there thinking anything against them. I love them, whoever was doing whatever they're doing. And somebody would notice and say to me, oh, I'm so sorry, chaplain. I didn't see you were here. And I would tell them over and over again, you don't offend me. It's him you got to work it out with. I said, I'm just a sales rep. You know, they would laugh. But it's really true. You need to be a representation, a representative of the holy. And how are you going to do that with an unholy nature? You got to crucify that nature. Practice, 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 and let the nature of God come out. So in Romans 12, 1 to 2, there's relief from this mess. We're going to end with this. And it says, I urge you, therefore, brethren. I can understand that because, you know, Paul had seen a lot of this stuff coming and going. I urge you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies, your actual physical bodies, as a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship, that you would not get caught up in even the defiling of the body like so many are with all of these other very physical and sexual sins. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Take every thought captive, remember that one. That you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. See, God knows what he's talking about. He's been watching mankind from the beginning. You see, he was in the beginning. Even though there's no beginning of time for him, the beginning of what he made began. So he's been there from that beginning. His truth always ends up staying away from trouble and misery. It always leads you in the right way. It leads you, it's like being in the woods and you're lost. Don't you want to be on that well-marked path? Yeah. Yet there's a lot of people that go out hiking and they get lost because what do they say? I'll find the way. I know it. I can do this myself. Okay. Trials and tribulations now. I want you to understand. Trials and tribulations because we suffer them. Do we suffer them? Oh, my gosh. Just your family alone, some of the trials and tribulations. Just one family in the church. Then you add that family. Then you add that family. You add my family. You add all the other families that are in this church. We've had trials and tribulations, and yet we love the Lord with all our hearts, and we might be stumbly-bumbling down here, but we are trying. We are forgiven. We ask God to forgive us, and we go on and try and do it better. But remember, they're different than trouble and misery. Trials and tribulation are different from trouble and misery. So stay with the truth of God. The final thought is in Philippians 4:8. This is what we need to do. Put this one. Write this one on your mirror, the bathroom. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, then let your mind dwell on these things. Now, I would ask you to maybe tape that to the TV and put that up against what you're watching or what you're listening to in terms of music or what you're reading in a magazine. Does it meet this measure? Teach this to your children. Make it something alive and viable to you. You see, this is the measuring stick. Any teacher says this is the right way. This is how you got to do. Andrea, didn't we teach you some stuff in math and formulas and stuff? You can't just come up and say what you want, oh, I'm just going to do it my way. In order to come to an appropriate answer, to a logical conclusion on something, you have to follow some of the mathematical concepts. So all God is saying is this is the formula to a holy life. That's all he's saying, it's the formula. This plus this equals that. All of this plus this equals death. So take all of what God says, it equals life. Take all of what the adversary, the world, the flesh, and the devil says, and it's going to equal death. Disobedience equals disaster. And we don't want to go there. We want that good and true and wonderful and lovely things that God has said. God never leaves us hanging. He doesn't have us just like, you know, oh, death, dark, and destruction. Some of the sermons today are like, you know, wrath and whatever. This is a loving God. He cares for us. He is not the picture that's been painted by so many who don't know him. And yet his wrath is real, but it's for the unrighteous. And it's in his timing and how he does it. And just because you're suffering doesn't mean God's punishing you. He allows many things to happen to strengthen us. Just like if you're going to go work out at the gym, you start out lifting 10 pounds, at a certain point you're going to be up to 50. If you just stay with 10, there will be no muscle growth. You have to have heavier, more resistance, more struggle, more stuff to get stronger. It's the same way in the Lord. If he's in charge, that trial and tribulation is going to be used for your benefit. What was meant as evil against you is going to be turned around for good. God bless you.